You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 14 May. We've got German inflation data due 8 o'clock. Our time expected, slightly down at 2.1%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kian and Yana, Scope Prime. I want to touch Exxaro getting manganese assets. And if we have some sort of tariff piece, and I have a theory there, does this take some shine off gold? Abby Reitenbach from Absa Agri Business. Impact on tariffs at the local agri sector. And then John Paul Fraser from Tax Consulting SA. How expats are amongst millions stepping into the two-pot money. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, taxpayer battling with a crypto tax nightmare for months, owing SARS 1.7 million rand from profits he has not made. Business Day, SA Crofts trade package and high stakes US gamble. Presidents Cyril Ramaphosa and Donald Trump are scheduled to meet in Washington next week. Morning markets. The US was green, S&P up 0.7%, NASDAQ 1.6% higher. Over the East, it is mixed. Sydney is down 0.2%, Tokyo is off 0.8%, Hong Kong is green at 1.4% higher, and Tencent 2.25% up. Commodities green, gold futures 2,334, Brent is 66.15, platinum 990, palladium 953. The Rand is 18.32. Bitcoin 1,003,500 and top 40 opening call green 275 points or about a third of a percent higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Kian Nyana. He is from Scope Prime. Kian, okay, appreciate the early morning time. Big announcement out from Exxaro yesterday. They're just over 11 billion they're spending. That number could go higher and lower with some T's and C's. Essentially moving into manganese. And I hadn't realized just how, I mean, South Africa seems to have almost all of the manganese. I think there's a 4 billion ton deposit up in the Northern Cape. They're moving away from coal. This has long been their stated idea. They will still be primarily coal, but moving into other commodities. Your think around the deal?
You know, Si, Exxaro has been kicking the tires on assets of such as copper and vanadium, and they finally struck some manganese in the Northern Cape. I mean, this proposed deal with Simbintle, which earns about 50.1% of Tsipiboroa mine, is game-changing in nature. And listening to what Ben Magara was saying, he speaks of the fact that, as you said, South Africa has almost 70% of the world's manganese, and it's all concentrated around the Northern Cape. And what all he also cites is the fact that they have experience in large open-cost mining operations, which they would be bringing to this asset. So all around, it really has been a 3-year kicking the tire search for new metals in the stable for Exxaro.
And I got to say, 3 years is a long time. And apparently this deal even took in of itself about a year. The fact that they took longer kind of gives me some comfort that maybe they didn't rush into it. So perhaps they got a better asset, a better deal.
I think so too, but I think what was stated about why there was a corporate tussle with the previous CEO in Mombasa was the fact that this transition was taking a little bit too slow. So we don't know if it had a lot to do with that corporate struggle that it did take this long. Maybe they may have closed deals before, but I think with the strategic importance of manganese in the new green economy, it's really a game-changing asset for Exxaro.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And to your point, I mean, it is part of the green economy, and that's what they want to do. They want to shift away their reliance from coal, which is old economy. Next strange tack, let's touch on gold. We've got some sort of peace in our time with China, although perhaps more than anything in terms of trade tariffs, the sense that Trump is more than happy to negotiate, and in most cases down. It looks like we're going to get a lot of 10% tariffs on countries. Not nice, but way lower than maybe what the Liberation Day had said. China will be higher. This is perhaps taking some shine off gold as I don't know, a bit of a tariff piece in our time. is gold under pressure, or is it a case of, you know what, hold it anyway because it's not going anywhere just yet?
You know, for the first time in a very long time, I was at the BCI Global Investment Conference yesterday, and listening to people who manage people's money, who get paid to manage people's money. This is the first time I've actually listened to portfolio managers, and they were upbeat on gold and gold counters. What they cite is the operating leverage that gold counters really have at times like this. So, I mean, when faced with questions across the fund ranges, portfolio managers were speaking about holding both gold and gold counters in their portfolios at the current moment. So I genuinely don't believe that anyone views the fact that there has been a bit of a peace right now in tariff wars, that peace will prevail for the rest of eternity. So I think people are still holding on to gold.
Rest of eternity. I think I'm not even sure it's going to hold for the rest of Trump's 4-year term, but I 100% take your point on that. We'll leave it there. That's Kenyon Yanahi, of course, from Scope Prime. And our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter, is about that Exxaro $11 billion, more or less. I mean, as I said, it could go higher or lower because there's some T's and C's there. So it's a good deal for the company. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Arbie Reitenbach, executive for Absa Agri Business. Arbie, I appreciate the time. Farming is tough. We've got climate change. We've got disease. We've got pricing. We've now got tariff uncertainty, probably the best way to do it. Let's start with tariffs. How are these tariff issues influencing financial decisions and strategies in the agriculture sector?
Hi, Simon. Yeah, thank you for having me and thank you for the opportunity. So I think, Simon, if we can get back, because I think it's the most current thing, you know, forefront of our minds is the tariffs at the moment. And we've seen a number of our sectors, you know, that actually are exporting. And I guess it all starts with a Liberation Day tariff announcement. So it is really around, you know, the US and how they disrupted, you know, this playing field, you know, at the moment. And I would like to start by saying it is fairly important for us to maintain shelf space in the US. We've seen with COVID, you know, once you're not in a market, you start losing that shelf space. So it is fairly important that we maintain that. Citrus, the forefront, you know, we're busy with the season at the moment. It was part of AGOA. AGOA is not in existence anymore. So there's first a 30% tariff, now down to a 10. We've got until 9 July, you know, most probably to export still under this 10% tariff. And it's only the Western Cape that can export, you know, due to diseases, you know. So it's really a Western Cape play at the moment. And I guess, you know, at the moment we've seen, you know, in the press, South Africa is making ready to engage the US government. I think the fortunate thing is when we are in production, they do not have citrus, so we're not competing with anything that they can manufacture or produce locally. But we also realize that when you go and you go into these discussions with the US, you'll have to bring something, you know, it's a give and a take. And high on their agenda is pork and poultry. So I think they would like to export that to us. So it is a complex calculation to give, because we would like to protect our local industries. I think food security is of the utmost importance, especially when stuff is so uncertain as it is at the moment. So hopefully we've got a strong enough delegation to negotiate with the US, and even if it's a quota that we can get for citrus, that would be great. But I do think it is fairly important that we remain or keep that shelf space at 30%. The question is, how much would the consumer in the US be able to absorb? Because, I mean, their price would increase and there's going to be a point where they're going to go for alternatives. So our sense is that if we get back to a 30% tariff, that the value chain would at different spots in that value chain would try and absorb, you know, some of those increases. But hopefully we don't get to that that would be first price for us.
Yeah, I get your point, in particular about being on the shelves. That's so hugely important. And 10% manageable, 30% a different game. You mentioned diseases there, citrus diseases, avian flu, foot and mouth. How does the sector try and sort of build financial resilience to mitigate? These are, I don't want to say common occurrences, but they are a part of farming in many cases.
Yes, Simon, and I think, you know, in international trade, non-tariff barriers are also being used. Yeah. You know, diseases are being used. We've seen that in the EU where they, you know, stopped some of or demand certain protocols for our citrus to, you know, to get there. We think it's unnecessary. And for the first time, we're actually at the World Trade, we've locked a dispute and we're at the World Trade Organization trying to resolve that. But I think if you just cast back, and I mean, let's start with the human disease, you know, COVID. I think diseases are becoming more pertinent. It's becoming extremely important. And our advice is always, we've got good structures in South Africa. We've got a good agricultural sector. So we've got producer organizations that first and foremost does some research. We've got the chemical companies that also do research. We've got biotechnology in terms of seeds and fixing some of that or make it drought resistant or disease resistant. Back to the point is that you need to belong to your producer organization because they are actually lobbying for you and they are picking up the bigger issues and trying to solve for that issues, whether it is by getting the right people around the table to discuss it and find solutions. So it's definitely a risk. At the moment, the tariffs is on top of the list, but I guess once we sort that out, this disease, and you've seen it in the US as well, they had bird flu and egg prices are sky high. So it affects everybody, and you need a proper functioning value chain, including the government, you know, in terms of approving certain vaccines, you know, to be administered or certain products, and private sector and the research, and then, you know, the farmers or the producers that can then apply it and make sure that it doesn't spread any further. So it is a complex, but organized agriculture, that's the way to deal through it. I think as a bank, we understand that agriculture got along over a deep cycle. So you need to be, you know, through thick and thin with clients. You can't be in 1 year and out the next year. So it's literally financing and supporting through the cycles, you know, to make sure. And once again, you know, bringing back food security is of the utmost importance.
Yeah, and I think a key point, it's not just the farmer at the forefront of disease. There is support from government associations, as you say, the farmer industry and the like. And I think that's hugely important. We'll leave it there. Zebio Reitenbach, Executive for Absa Agribusiness. Appreciate the time.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with John Paul Fraser, Team Lead Cross-Border Taxation at Tax Consulting SA. John Paul, appreciate the early morning time. If we're looking at expats before the March 2021, you could, as I understand, withdraw retirement funds immediately upon formalizing the immigration process. That's with both SARS and SARB. Since then, however, there's a three-year lock-in rule that is applied. In other words, you actually can't touch the money until 3 years after you have effectively immigrated. Is that a fair reflection of the current status quo in South Africa?
Very good morning, Simon. Pleasure to be here early, and a very good synopsis. At this stage, we are obviously getting used to the new two-pot system. I think a lot of people are quite liking it at the moment in terms of their savings pot. But yes, your two pots, other than your savings pot, which is your retirement investment pot, are subject to a three-year lock-in rule, which is essentially a three-year lock-in period from the date you formalize your non-tax residency application.
And that two-pot does, however, then make a loophole of sorts, because it's not part of the three-year wait. So if you have left within the last 3 years, you can access the, not all of it, of course, but some of that money sitting in the savings pot.
Definitely. I think that's where everyone's quite loving the two-pot system at the moment. But your savings pot, accessible immediately.
Mm-hmm.
It could get one withdrawal per annum or per tax year,
mm-hmm.
but it's available immediately. So there's no 3-year waiting period in that regard at all, correct?
But will it still be taxed, however? And because if I withdraw and I'm a South African resident and taxpayer, I get taxed at my marginal rate, nice and clean in that regard. But if I've sort of emigrated and living, I don't know, somewhere else, is it still subject to tax?
It definitely still is. Firstly, for as long as you're still a tax resident, it would be fully taxable in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
For those expats who have formalized their non-tax residency, it would still be subject to tax. But the interesting thing is your savings pot portion is taxed on your normal, like you mentioned, marginal tax rate. So, for example, an expat who hasn't been working here in the previous year or earning any remuneration, their two-pot savings pot withdrawal, obviously, incredibly low tax or no tax at all in terms of their threshold. But your lump sum withdrawals in terms of your retirement invested pot, those are taxed on your lump sum tax tables. So even though you're abroad, still fully taxable. Yeah.
Yeah, I get you on that. There's also a note that you made that I hadn't actually realized, which I thought, and it's moving off track from the two-part. But essentially, when you cease tax residency, you've deemed to have disposed of assets at market value, and this can create some capital gains tax. And this would be, SARS looks at it as your worldwide assets. So suddenly you potentially got capital gains events on, I don't know, a property in London that you might not have sold and you might not have cash flow.
100% correct. That's why it's also important just to almost plan your non-tax residency. You know, the last thing you do want is to be caught with a bit of capital gains tax on, and in a real life scenario was a property in London. You know, your capital gains tax on that is astronomical. So, definitely something to avoid. We can backdate your non-tax residency if you're only applying now.
Mm-hmm.
To the date you depart, sometimes offers the relief that you do need there.
Yeah, back to Tupot. SARS has got almost 12 billion in tax revenue. This is a lot more than their anticipated 5 billion. South Africans are jumping into it. I mean, by accounts, almost 3 million South Africans have taken some money out. And of course, it's now the new year and they can take another slug of cash out. And certainly it seems that they are.
They definitely are. I mean, bearing in mind, this only came into effect from September of last year. So we haven't even faced a full 12-month period. And like you said, just under 3 million individuals accessing their savings pot. In terms of the dispersion between the tax brackets, interestingly enough, there's not much difference between those earning in the lower brackets to those earning in the upper brackets. So definitely across the spectrum, South Africans making use of their two-pot savings withdrawal.
Yeah, I saw that. 768,000 in the sub 18%, and then the sort of 30 to 40, 640 and 640 in the middle. That did jumped out at me as well. And we are seeing by data again, who was it? Retirement Matters Committee of the Equatorial Society of South Africa. It's a giant mouthful, but they're saying we are seeing a lot of repeat claims. Folks who took out in the first opportunity are coming back a second time.
Yeah, correct. And that is actually one of the fears the two-pot savings pot at least bring in, is that you then start to rely on it as a form of income, which is obviously not its main purpose, you know. So that is problematic, but that is what the stats are showing, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's supposed to be for emergencies, but it is available, and some folks will choose whether it is or isn't. But we'll leave it there. That's John Paul Fraser, Team Lead, Cross-Border Taxation at Tax Consulting SA. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We're chatting with Alex Dace about the first set of listed results from a listed boxer. Of course, those results previously always just been within Pick and Pay. Now they stand on their own, although Pick and Pay is still the majority shareholder. We asked what you made of the numbers. 40% said nope, you expected better. Of course, there was a lot of extra shares issued, which actually saw HEPS under pressure, although revenue was looking good, and that margin at 5.5%, as we say, sort of ShopRite levels. The rest was split between looking great and prefer others. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Exchange standardization across the continent.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.